Attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
Come here to talk sports.
It is man at his most man.
And do it like you mean it.
What you got, biatch?
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
This is college basketball country, and since camps are starting to open up, I've got my ACC basketball predictions right here that you can keep me accountable for when March comes around. They start and they end with the Louisville Cardinals. I'm all in on Chris Mack and the Cards to win this upcoming season, regardless of if Jordan Wara and Stephen Enoch decided to return to school in May. They were both right on the borderline, and then the day of the deadline, they decided to return to Louisville. I thought this team was going to be competitive, going to be a contender in the ACC, but right now, with those two in the fold, I think Louisville is the deepest team. I think they're the most experienced team, and whenever I'm forecasting a season, I tend to favor known quantities more than the lesser-known variables, no matter how highly touted those lesser-known variables to be. That's why I like Louisville over North Carolina and Duke. North Carolina has Cole Anthony, who might be more talented than any player in the Atlantic Coast Conference this year. Duke brings in the second-ranked recruiting class in the country with Vernon Carey and Matthew Hurt and Wendell Moore and many other friends. Trey Jones returning. First returning point guard at Duke since Quinn Cook, the year they won the national title in 2015. Alex O'Connell back. Jack White back. Javon Delorier back. It's strange to see Duke with more returning talent than North Carolina has. Not to say North Carolina is going to be inexperienced. Keeling and Pierce, the grad transfers coming in from lesser levels, they are older players, but North Carolina is going to be replacing four starters. So I don't know what it's going to look like. And Duke hasn't won a regular season ACC title since 2010, when they started pursuing the one and done as heavily as Coach K has pursued it since Kyrie Irving, really, that 2010-2011 season. So I like Louisville to win the league. I think there are only four contenders to win the league this year. It is North Carolina, Louisville, Duke, and I still say Virginia. It's the most fascinating story in the conference this year. Can Virginia continue to be competitive and be a contender in this conference, the best conference in college basketball, after losing Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, and another starter in Jack Salt? Like Duke and North Carolina losing four starters. Can you replace them when you're not recruiting the same way North Carolina and Duke are? You're recruiting into a system. You're bringing in some good players this year, and that's bound to happen when you win a national title and you go 33-3 in a two-year stretch in conference play. I'm not counting out Virginia because in this system, Tony Bennett always seems to find a way to recreate this DeAndre Hunter-like player. We saw it with Justin Anderson once upon a time. Joe Harris playing a very similar role. We saw it with Malcolm Brogdon. He develops these guys who aren't these highly recruited players and turns them into all ACC talent. The big question with Virginia basketball centers on Mamadi Diakite. Did he play a lesser role in scoring because he was unable to score or because he wasn't asked to score? There's only so many shots, especially in Virginia's offense. And when you have Guy and you have Jerome and you have DeAndre Hunter, how many shots are out there for Amabadi Diakite, who hit the biggest shot of the year to advance Virginia to the Final Four, and they ultimately won, of course? How many shots are available? You have him back, Kihei Clark, who assisted on that shot, back. Braxton Key, the leading rebounder, back. You have Jay Huff, who I think will do a nice job replacing Jack Song. Jay Huff, I think, is the only player last year who dunked on Zion Williamson. I don't know that for sure, but I think statistically, the only player that dunked on Zion was Jay Huff and Zion got him back a little bit later on in the game with that right-handed flush when everyone said he can't drive right. He proved that wrong, and he got Jay Huff back.
I was going to say, I distinctly remember Zion dunking on Jay Huff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember Jay Huff dunking on Zion.
Oh, yeah, earlier in the game. Go and look it up. You can find the dunk. Jay Huff posterized Zion Williamson. I expect Jordan Wara from Louisville to win the league. I'm all in on the Cardinals. I think he's the best player. He's the second highest scorer among returning players in the league behind Marquise Reed, who's back for Clemson. Clemson and NC State, I think, are going to have good years and both going to make the tournament. Markell Johnson back. That's big for Kevin Keats. Notre Dame's going to be improved. I think they'll make the NCAA tournament. Syracuse will be okay. But only four contenders to win the league. Louisville, I think, will win it. North Carolina, Duke, and Virginia, the other contenders as well. Yes, Des.
So your Chris Mack at Louisville pick is actually a really interesting one because in the space of the past decade, the 2010 to 11 season, there's only been three ACC head coaches that have actually won the ACC regular season. Roy Williams being one, Tony Bennett being the other. Do you know who the third one was?
It had to be. It's a great trivia question because one year, both in the ACC tournament and in the ACC, Jim Larrañaga and Miami won. It was Larkin. It was Durand. That was a fun team that they had back
then.
That
was a bunch of men.
Julian Gamble.
Team. Yeah, that was a bunch of 25-year-olds running around the ACC.
He's one of the
year.
Most fun people, too. I remember we were doing a radio show, and Julian Gamble was listening and said, "Hey, can I come in?" I'm like, "What are you doing in North Carolina?" "Sure." So Julian Gamble just pops in and comes on the radio with us. I loved that Miami team a few years ago.
What happened to those guys?
No idea. I think Larkin's still in the league.
I think Larkin's still playing in the NBA. But yeah, you're right, man. That was a bunch of just grown men.
I think Chris Mack can break through. Last year, we saw that with a team no one expected to do much of anything, he went into Chapel Hill and beat North Carolina by 21, 22 points. I think they learned a lot by the way things ended last year, and they just have this good combination of youth and experience. I brought up Enoch and I brought up Wara. They have this great front court, but they have sharpshooters in the back court. They have a top 25 recruit in Samuel Williamson, not to be confused with Zion. He's a top 25 recruit. I love what Louisville is doing. I also love these Wake Forest uniforms. They put this up today. Looking clean. There's these old throwbacks that they're wearing. It says Deacons across the front. Going back to the Tim Duncan days. It's so clean. Only thing they need to do now is bring back the Deacon head. Put it in the middle of the floor. But the uniforms, they are clean. And I'm excited that we're talking about college basketball. Finally. It's also one-hit wonder day, which had us thinking, who decides what day it is? It's one-hit wonder day. Why can't we pick a day? And if we were going to pick a certain day and lead that charge, the same way we're leading a Jamie Newman Heisman campaign charge, what will we make that day be? Give me an idea for what you have here, for what day we might nominate here.
I wrote down National Beer Day, but I think there's already
there
a
is
beer
a National
day.
Beer Day.
That
there
just
has
seems
to
too
be.
Easy. Yeah, I think we've celebrated it together on here before.
Yes. I'll celebrate National Beer Day whatever day it is.
Every day.
National Beer Day is Tuesday, April the 7th.
Wow.
2020.
I also wrote National Hip Hop Day, but again, it feels like there's so many of them that everything I thought of, it's like, I think they've already done this, so... Where did you go to find the National Beer Day? You just typed it in?
I just searched National Beer Day on the Google.
On the Google.
At Sports Up Triumph, what kind of day can we start here?
National Ugly Day.
Oh, celebrate the ugly people.
How did we, what?
You hug an ugly person.
You hug an ugly person?
That would be a charitable thing to do.
Nobody looks out for ugly people.
It would be a great thing to do, be a great Samaritan to do that. I don't know if you'd be the Philadelphia Eagles fan. I don't know if you'd be that level of great. If you didn't see it earlier in the week, there was this guy who was interviewed by a TV affiliate who saved two kids, at least two, from a building, catching them and taking them away from a fiery building. He did a TV interview. It was right after his beloved Philadelphia Eagles lost, and he made it known that he still wasn't happy about it in a TV interview. Again, this is right after he saved a couple of lives.
Down. My man just started throwing babies out the window.
Wow.
We was catching them. Unlike Aguilar and his mishaps. I like to put that out there.
Unlike Aguilar.
His mishaps.
And his mishaps. I just want to put that out there. Who would that guy be for the Panthers? Brandon LaFell? Maybe Ted Ginn Jr.
Ted Ginn got a lot of slack for
unlike Ted Ginn.
Could have been
his mishap.
Could have been Cam after that Super Bowl performance.
Woo!
That's not fair.
But it's true.
That's not fair.
But he's back in the headlines, this Philadelphia guy. This sound comes to you courtesy of NBC 10 in Philadelphia. They wanted to follow up on this guy because he went viral, and he's still not happy about his Eagles.
He says he caught a baby and an adult woman in the air.
You can believe in me. I'm not going to drop her. So she came down, boom. My first thought, actually, in the back of my head was like, yeah, no fumble. So I caught two.
You caught two?
Mm-hmm. And then ran him in for a touchdown.
After rescuing people from a burning building, how was the Eagles' loss still on his mind in that moment?
I messed up my whole day. That was earlier the same day that happened. Maybe 12 hours or so. Less than that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about that all day.
What's the best part of that clip? Him saying, him catching a football in the clip and saying, boom, catching human life in air, then saying he's going to run him in for a touchdown, or that with a fire happening, the Eagles' loss is still very much on his mind because his team's 1-2.
He came down, boom.
That's right. Boom. Eagles fans, you guys are the greatest.
Boom.
Really are.
Call two of them.
What's the most impressive thing Kyle Allen accomplished on Sunday? The voice of the Carolina Panthers, Mick Mixon, will tell us next on The Drive.
He came down, boom. My first thought.
Here comes the life of the party.
The Drive.
Corrupting the minds and the hearts of our children.
With Josh Graham.
Program for low expectations.
On Sports Hub Triad.
Woo!
When you think about one-hit wonders, I think the aha does come to mind. And I'm seeing on social media, it is one-hit wonder day. So a lot of people are bringing up, aha, this being Take On Me. Mick Mixon, I don't know if you ever performed this one hit that the aha put out there. You were once a drummer. I don't know the last time you picked up the drumsticks and got after it with one of your bands you've been in. But when you think of one-hit wonders, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, Edison Lighthouse, lead singer named Tony Burrows, who was really just sort of a mercenary. He sang with some other groups as well. They were actually almost... Another one is Na Na Hey Hey Kiss Him Goodbye with Steam. They were almost... like never even a band. I mean, it was just some studio cats that got together and laid a track down, captured the magic, and got into music history.
Were you ever close to creating a hit?
Oh, I've written several songs that I someday may roll with. I wrote a song called The Like Song years ago when I became so physically angry by the idiotic, stupid, repetitive, lazy reliance on this word by the younger generation. So I may put the Like Song out there someday. And then 2 years ago I wrote a song called I Want to Date a Hairdresser. I was driving to a speaking engagement in Albemarle, and I passed this hair salon called the Hairtopia. And I thought of this old boy riding down the road, not too happy with all these highfalutin women that are costing him a bunch of money that he's trying to date. And I imagine him looking toward the Hairtopia thinking, if I could just date, I guarantee you in there somewhere cutting hair is somebody who's down to earth that would be for me.
I imagine we'll get to the football in a second. Carolina Panthers play-by-play man Mick Mixon with us here on Sports Hub Triad. But the Like Song has me thinking there are things you see with the younger generation that bother you quite a bit. Is that the only one, or is there anything else?
Oh, God, no. Don't get me started. They have no idea what the word literally means. I mean, these numbheads, and we got some around here, some of our interns that say, I mean, it was like literally like raining like cats and dogs and stuff. That drives me nuts. A lot of them don't take the stairs. They think it's somehow their birthright to take the elevator, even though there's people in hospital beds laid up right now who would give anything to move if only they could. So in my judgment, to have the gift of mobility but not use it is an insult to those people who would give anything to be active if only they could.
So you're somebody, you spend a lot of time in airports, I'm sure. You always take the stairs versus taking the escalator.
Well, I try to, Josh. You know, you're going to get me in trouble. I'm far from, you know, the world doesn't spin around just the way you want it, nor
sure.
me. I could go on. It's one reason that I cannot be allowed to have Twitter or Instagram or anything else where I could have an immediate forum to get my views out into the world. I rather believe that scarcity breeds momentum. When people hear my voice, even though you get me into trouble sometimes with your questions, I'd rather just have them think, oh, that's the Panther guy.
One of the best books I've ever read, Rory Vaden's Take the Stairs, and the concept is pretty simple of the successful people in life. They're the ones that decide to take the stairs even if the escalator is available to them. Somebody who found a different a team that found a difficult way to get win number one's the Carolina Panthers. I don't think Ron Rivera drew it up at the start of the year. Cam Newton going down and you having to go on the road and win with Kyle Allen to get win number one. But after looking at what Carolina did in person and then reflecting on it the last few days, what's the most impressive thing you think Kyle Allen did?
Just the calmness about him. He performed so well in this crucible of pressure, being that he's from Scottsdale. He had friends and family there. He had the weight of an entire region on his shoulders. He was up to it. He had an early hiccup with the sack fumble. So he had every reason to get in the fetal position and reel in and just try to throw the ball sideways and complete some passes and try not to lose the game. But instead, he field generaled the offense. It had snap. It had rhythm. It had completed passes. It had Kyle Allen going off script sometimes, yet in perfect pitch. And it's something you can get behind. Now, he's pulled the starter rope on Panther Nation, Josh, thinking, what do we have here? Could this be someone who can function? Could this be the next Jake DeLome? Could this be an answer to the QB question moving forward? And I feel sometimes like I'm in the middle of a season, or not the middle of, but at the beginning of a season that someday could be an ESPN 30 for 30. Are we in a Harvard Business School practicum on leadership and dynamics, and how do we handle Cam Newton when and if he comes back? I mean, it's just fascinating dynamics around here.
Amy Trask was writing for The Athletic earlier today about the idea of disclosing injuries, what that really earns a team, and how much of a disadvantage disclosing information really is. And, I mean, you've covered the Carolina Tar Heels for a very long time and the Panthers since 2005, so I'm sure you've dealt with so many coaches, and before that, high school sports. And I always found that the coaches that gave the most, they were always the coaches that had the most success. Coach K, he opens up his locker room to everybody because, you know, he has nothing to hide, nothing that you're going to find in there that he deems to be scary if it is made public by the media in some senses. Do you think the disadvantage in sports that comes along with disclosing injuries is overblown, considering how good these teams are at scouting opposition and identifying where weaknesses may be?
You would know more about this than me, young man, being that you are closer to a millennial brain, a Gen X or a Gen Z or whatever it is. My opinion is from looking down on the social media landscape from the upper deck here in my little senior citizen almost station in life, is that there's no such thing as being coy with injury information now. You can try, but when players have their own news disseminating websites, when they're tweeting and putting out their own burnt feet bottoms from the hyperbaric chamber or their own acupuncture from going to see Dr. Ming Yao or whatever the heck it is, then what good does it do an NFL team to play loose and close to the vest with the injury report? I'm just not sure.
It's just interesting to me where coaches protect this information like it's the nuclear codes, and you're talking about Cam Newton. Okay, you don't want to come out publicly and say, yeah, this guy's he's banged up. His foot, it's not 100% right now from the New England game and whatnot, but it was clear Tampa Bay saw on tape, hey, we're going to see if he's going to test the foot because he didn't against the L.A. Rams. And I'm not going to say it's a disservice to Cam to go out there publicly and not tell people what's going on with the injury, disclose it. But I do find it interesting. We're still in this place. Maybe it's following the cues of successful coaches like Bill Belichick and Nick Saban where they don't give anybody anything. But I just don't know what advantage it gives.
I don't either. I mean, I'll tell you, my wife, Josh, Donnie's about 5 feet of hell that I'm married to. You know, she looks at the world, really, she don't care about ball or wins and losses. She just wants to know who's honest and who's a good person. So she'll point her finger in my face sometimes and say, Coach lied. I feel like he lied to the media. He said this, we're going to go week to week, but then this guy, but he knew this. And I say, babe, just relax, just calm down. This is routinely done. It's not a moral capital offense. You're trying not to give away who you're going to be playing with in that next week's game. Sometimes the coaches don't have all the information.
Sure.
So I don't know. It's a great topic. I think in Cam Newton's case, I think you'd be doing a this is on the table for discussion. You could possibly be doing a disservice to a proud athlete like Cam Newton if you don't release or don't at least acknowledge that, yeah, he's hurt. It's legit. He's got a foot injury. To quiet down those people that might think just because of what he looks like he's wearing to press conferences, they think somehow he's not interested in football anymore. That's not true at all.
It avoids the news cycle that we've seen after the Rams game and after the Tampa Bay game. Hey, we're evaluating Cam unfairly by saying that this guy's 100% when we know, we see from the Patriots game and what Cam is saying himself, that he's not out of the woods and he's somebody that still has a ways to go. And time will tell when he's able to return. Mick Mixon, the voice of the Carolina Panthers, with us. The last time you joined us, Mick, you were telling us a story about Mac Brown, where you said you got dog cussed by him after saying something you probably shouldn't on the air. Made a joke that was funny at the time, and Mac didn't find it very funny. Teaching you a lesson when you were at North Carolina. Is that the worst you've ever been dog cussed out by a coach?
Probably was. Let me think. Let me think.
Are there many instances here?
Oh, no, I'll tell you one. I got a good one for you.
All right.
So I love finding out these players, and I think it's just part of our job, right? It's part of our job to find out. It's not enough to just know that this guy wears number 3 and he's 6'8 forward from Bow Bridge, Louisiana, or whatever. You got to try to at least learn some interesting things. So then internet, smartphone days. The Tar Heels go to Virginia to play Terry Holland's Virginia Cavaliers. Terry Holland has a forward name or a big guard named Bryant Stith.
Oh,
do you remember Bryant Stith?
Yeah, and I knew his son too. Brandon played in college.
So I had seen in the media guide the notes that Bryant Stith's middle name was LaMonica. So we have Bryant LaMonica Stith. So this plagues me now. My curiosity is, I just can't wait to talk to Bryant Stith and find out how he got the middle name of LaMonica. So the Cavaliers are warming up. The Tar Heels are warming up. We have an interview playing on the Tar Heel Sports Network pregame show. I've got a minute, so I grab my trusty reporter's notepad and go under the basket where Virginia's in a layup line. And I wait until Bryant Stith cruises in right over, sails almost right over my head, and lays the ball in, and then he lands, and he's right in front of me. And I said, Bryant LaMonica Stith. And he stopped like I had tasered him. He says, how'd you know my middle name? I said, I read it in the media guide. How did you get your middle name? And he says, you will not believe it. It's the most amazing thing of all. My dad was a huge Oakland Raiders fan, and he had $2,000 bet on the Raiders at the Chiefs. On the day that I was born, Daryl LaMonica, the quarterback for the Raiders, threw 3 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. The Raiders won. My dad won money. He was so happy he middle named me LaMonica. Isn't that a pearl? But while this is happening, I'm aware that there's someone running at me at top speed. And I look over to my right, and it's Terry Holland, the head coach of the Virginia Cavaliers, running from the bench all the way down to get in my face. And he's waving his arms. He says, what are you doing talking to my players? Don't talk to my players. I said, Coach, have you But have you? Do you know how he got his middle name of LaMonica? It's the most amazing story of all. Here, let me share it with you. I don't care how he got it. You know, so that one, Terry Holland and Mack Brown were probably the two that were the maddest at me.
Terry Holland. I don't think I've ever seen Terry Holland mad before. He was East Carolina's director of athletics for a handful of years, got to know Terry quite a bit. And Brandon Stith played at Old Dominion while his dad was, I think, Bryant, was helping out on staff there. So
how about that?
Good connective tissue we have all across this region with college basketball, and in your case, the NFL as well. Mick, always appreciate the stories, the thought, and the time. I'm sure I'll see you sometime soon. Have a good call this weekend.
Appreciate it, Josh. Thanks for calling me.
You got it. That's Mick Mixon, voice of the Carolina Panthers. Every time we have him on, I might as well, at the end of an interview, he makes things so easy for me as a radio host. I mean, I might as well have just said, Mick, can you just tell me a story? That's it. Like, it could just be as simple as that. But then just the storytelling of Terry Holland being mad and the middle name of Bryant Stith being LaMonica. Don't say you didn't learn anything today. Bryant Stith's middle name is LaMonica, and he got it because his dad won a bet involving the Raiders and Daryl LaMonica. Excellent. Yes, Aaron.
And young people are apparently entitled to elevators as
That's
well.
Right.
I believe it.
Take the stairs.
Funny thing.
Take the stairs. I do it every time. Take the stairs. You're better for it.
I'm a stair taker, personally.
Me too.
But I will take an elevator if it's like an absurd amount of floors. My pet peeve is if you get on the elevator, I'm going to like floor 5 from 1. You get on the elevator and you hit floor number 2, damn you.
Yeah,
you couldn't take one flight of stairs.
That's bad. Take the stairs.
Some people like the... the luxury.
I mean, it takes longer.
I'd be down for doing that every day if we could. The thing that grinds Mick Mixon's gears and just a story. That could have just been the interview. Like, why did we even get to the Panthers crap? Why? I get we have to because we have people who say, hey, why aren't you talking about the Panthers?
I mean, we are a
Come
sports
on.
Station, yeah.
No, well, we talk sports. We talk around sports. We got Mick telling stories about Daryl LaMonica or Bryant Stith's dad naming him after Daryl LaMonica. That and him grinding on millennials. That didn't come out right. Him
Pause.
Criticizing millennials. That's the highlight of the interview, not the Kyle Allen stuff. He works for the Panthers. He can't say anything negative about Carolina. Or I guess he could, but it wouldn't be smart.
How many floors is too many floors? Like, if you get to a building, you're like, I'm taking the stairs because I'm a stairwalker. How many floors is it where you're like, I better take the elevator?
3 floors. If three? It's more than 3 floors for me, I'm not taking the stairs.
I got a five floor max.
5 floors? Oh, my gosh. Walking for like 15 minutes.
I'm in good shape, man.
Yeah. Come on, Des.
And I'm 6'5", so like I skip a step.
Oh, there it is.
I don't even hit every step.
Ah, that's fair. Good to know. Did you know that? The Dixie Classic Fair is coming up. Oh, goodness. Get excited about this. Because the Dixie Classic Fair, as always, it's the Winston-Salem Fairgrounds, October 4th through the 13th. It's the 137th year of the fair. How do you ride? There's thrillers, there's speeders, or just the carousel. Show us with the hashtag how you care to celebrate at the Dixie Classic Fair. Hashtag how do you fare and share you and your favorite ride. Visit dcfair.com today. Fireworks, rides, food nightly. It's coming up October the 4th. Dixie Classic Fair. Time just melting away.
Welcome to the show that cloned the Loch Ness Monster. And got her drunk.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
Yesterday, I started examining the numbers with Wake Forest quarterback Jamie Newman, seeing that he's leading the ACC in practically every passing category, and thought, since we're here in the Triad, we might as well start the grassroots Heisman campaign for one, Jamie Newman. Not believing that he's actually going to win, but I believe this season for Wake Forest is less about trying to win the college football playoff trophy and instead just gain rightfully earned respect regionally, nationally, and even individually with Jamie Newman. So I'm happy to lead that charge. On top of that, we were talking with Mina Kimes of ESPN when she joined us, and she said that she has no problem being the national face of the John Wolford Wolf Pack and pushing that this guy, the former Deke, is somebody who can make it as an NFL passer one day. She liked what she saw from him in the Rams preseason. David Hale covers the ACC about as closely as anybody does at ESPN, and he's been putting out these numbers with Jamie Newman, and we've been talking to you, David, for a while now about Wake Forest and wondering why people aren't giving this team enough credit. Are you going to help us lead on a national scale this grassroots Jamie Newman Heisman campaign?
You know, it's been said that some men are born into greatness and some have it thrust upon them, and I feel like that's me. I've had it thrust upon me, but I will pick up that mantle and carry it, yes, as long as I possibly can, or as long as Jamie Newman goes a few more games without a critical pick six.
It is funny. Wake Forest has started 4-0 two of the last three previous years, and none of those years turned out to be ultimately special seasons for Wake Forest. But this week, it always seems like Boston College is a massive game for Wake Forest. This game's going to be on the road at Chestnut Hill. The road team has won five times in a row in this series. But just looking largely at the ACC, who do you view to be the second-best team in the league right now, Wake Forest or Virginia?
I probably lean towards Virginia. I mean, I would love if you could put Wake Forest's offense with Virginia's defense. You'd have, I think, a team that could not necessarily beat Clemson 10 times out of 10, but a team that could challenge them. Look, you know, Wake's defense, I think, is vastly improved from where it was this time a year ago, but it is still a work in progress. There's still a lack of depth there. Virginia, on the other hand, I think is an offense that is still figuring out its identity beyond the fact that they've got a very good quarterback in Bryce Perkins. We'll learn a lot more about them this week against Notre Dame. But they've got a defense, I think, that can certainly go toe-to-toe with almost anybody in the ACC. Their linebackers are really good. They're really good. Joey Blount and Bryce Hall on the back end. I really like, you know, and I think it goes to show you that those are two coaches, Bronco Mendenhall and Dave Clawson, who are, I don't think they're very similar to each other, but they're definitely similar in that they're not similar to anybody else. They are guys who are doing it their own unique brand of coaching, their own unique way of building a football program, and they're both having success at it at places that, quite frankly, are not known for success on the football field, or at least not recently. So I think, you know, those are the two obvious answers. I would still lean Virginia for the moment, but I reserve the right to change my mind as early as 5 seconds from now.
It's ESPN's David Hale with us on Sports Hub Triad, one of the best Twitter handles you'll find out there, at a David Hale joint on Twitter. He had a story today, ESPN.com, inside Clemson's switch from Kelly Bryant to Trevor Lawrence 1 year later. In addition to that, last week you had a really neat story on Dabo Swinney and how other coaches, even though they haven't coached under him, have been influenced by Dabo and what you described to be the Dabo way. In related news, Dabo Swinney will be a guest on this show at this time tomorrow. What's the biggest misconception, though, looking at your story today, that people have about what happened with Clemson and Kelly Bryant 1 year ago?
I mean, there's a lot, I think, that, you know, everybody kind of lined up and chose sides there, which is reasonable. That's kind of how sports works. And if you were a Clemson fan who was angry that he left, and that's a reasonable take, you probably were full on Team Dabo and against Kelly and all of that. And if you were somebody who was a Kelly Bryant fan and appreciative of the fact that he had one last year to make something of himself in college football to hopefully play at the next level, and this was his only path to do that, then yeah, you're on Team Kelly. I don't think that there was really teams, though. I mean, the truth of the matter is that Kelly made a decision that was best for him. Dabo made the decision that was best for the team. Neither of them are even close to apologizing for it. I don't think either of them feel bad about it. It is certainly not the way I think either of them would have scripted the end of Kelly Bryant's career at Clemson. But it's just sort of funny that in the fandom world, everybody sort of picked sides, and I don't get the sense that there's a huge amount of animosity between the two sides internally. I mean, again, I think Kelly, his comments immediately afterwards saying that he didn't get a fair shake on things, I would guess are not ideal. Dabo, I think, was not thrilled that he left. It's the nature of the beast, though, is sort of the inherent individual versus team dynamic. But I think in the long run, Kelly Bryant is still very tight with a lot of guys on that Clemson team. He is a Clemson supporter still. And Dabo Swinney still likes Kelly Bryant, still thinks very highly of him as a person, and is still rooting for Kelly Bryant long term. So I think maybe if there's one big takeaway, it's that we all probably made a bigger deal out of it than the guys on the inside really did in terms of how they felt about each other.
Shocker that we would do that in the media.
No, never happens.
Kelly Bryant, though, he was the first major player to capitalize on the new rule from last year, the redshirt rule that would allow you to get to maintain a year of eligibility if you don't play in any more than four games. Now we're seeing that this week with De'Eriq King, who led the AAC, the American, in touchdowns last year with 50 under Dana Holgorsen now in his first year. He's essentially looking at this year and saying, all right, we're 1-3. I'd rather play next season, and hopefully we'll be more competitive in year two under Dana Holgorsen. Are you bothered by the way the redshirt rule is being exercised by upperclassmen?
It's a complicated question, or at least a complicated answer to a simple question anyway. I am bothered by some of it because it's problematic. But I also think that the rule in general has 100 positive impacts. You know, I mean, you could probably go down the line of players who benefit to some degree from it, and the offset is this cost of a couple of guys. I mean, really, through 2 years, we're talking about less than 10 guys who have utilized the rule in this way, one way or another. And even that, you know, to compare the De'Eriq King and Kelly Bryant situations is a little bit problematic, because what Kelly did was make a decision in which he really didn't have a lot of alternatives. Now, I've made the case that Dabo offered to let him stay with the team and not play him. I also realistically look at it as when Trevor Lawrence got hurt in week five against Syracuse, was Kelly Bryant really going to sit on the sideline and not play? I find that hard to believe, too. So the realistic outcome is that Kelly Bryant didn't have a lot of alternatives, and that's why he did this. And even comparing him to Jalen Hurts, which a lot of people wanted to do last year, is not entirely fair, because Jalen still had the opportunity to move on and play one more year, which Kelly would not have had. So that's one thing. Then you look at the De'Eriq King situation, and first off, I preface this by saying, I think there's more going on here than we're being told at the moment. From the initial comments from De'Eriq's father, I've had some conversations with Dana Holgorsen and did not come away thinking like, oh, man, he's super stoked on De'Eriq King, which is not to say he said anything particularly negative, but for a guy who had the year that De'Eriq had last year, I did not come away thinking, boy, he's really gotten a quarterback he's excited about building around. And then moreover, just this whole idea that, well, we started off bad, let's pack it in and let's tank for next season, to me, that's a huge problem. And not just from if it's De'Eriq's decision, certainly if the coaching staff is bought in on this, what does that say to the rest of your guys? What does that say to the guys that are still lining up and going out there and playing, and you're essentially telling them, we've all decided to quit on this season? That to me, is a bigger issue. And if that's how the rule is going to be utilized, and we start seeing that happen more and more with teams, that I do have a problem with, because it's not so much about what the guys are doing, because I think you can make the case that, all right, well, Dana's doing a thing that will benefit him long-term, benefit the program long-term, or De'Eriq's doing the same thing. But there's still guys that are going out there and lining up every week and putting their bodies on the line to try and win football games, and I think this sends a terrible message if that's the case.
It's ESPN's David Hale on Twitter, at a David Hale joint. Read the story, Inside Clemson Switch, from Kelly Bryant to Trevor Lawrence 1 year later. Clemson getting set for North Carolina this weekend. We'll be at that game Saturday at 3:30. But before we let you go, it is One Hit Wonder Day. Do you have a favorite One Hit Wonder, David?
Oh, man, I have so many. I could pretty much just make like a Spotify playlist of nothing but One Hit Wonders and be thrilled.
Right.
You know, I think probably my default answer would be Come On Eileen by Dexys Midnight Runners.
Nice.
That's an exceptional one. Biz Markie's Just a Friend would kind of come up as like my 90s favorite. I enjoyed that we had a little Bittersweet Symphony beforehand here. And this leads to what I think is the most fascinating bit of 90s coincidental trivia, in that at the same time, there was a band called The Verve and a band called The Verve Pipe. They were not the same band somehow, and they both had one-hit wonders at effectively the same time. That's a thing that you'll tell your children years from now, and they won't believe that it ever happened.
The Freshmen. How could we forget that? David, thanks for being with us. We'll talk soon.
All right, man. Take it easy.
You got it. That's David Hale. Joy.
He may not be beautiful, and we do sit around all day and talk sports. And yes, Britt McHenry, we feel great about it.
Do you feel good about your job?
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
Adam Sandler might be in line to get his first Oscars nomination. This trailer dropped yesterday for Uncut Gems. He's playing a serious, dramatic role. He's a jewelry dealer who's trying to pay off debts and has his merchandise taken from him. And now there's a lot of other stuff that he has to try and do to obtain, to make up his debt, pay his debt, and also obtain his merchandise. You look at this trailer, Kevin Garnett is acting, playing a serious role too, while also playing himself in the movie. Mike Francesa is dropping an F-bomb in the trailer. So what else could you ask for? Celebrity cameos and a serious role for Sandler. It is time for Adam Sandler to get an Oscars nomination. He's had Oscar-worthy performances in the past. No, I'm not talking about the comedies that he's done and the awful Netflix movies that he's done in the last decade or so. But the Academy has largely overlooked, I think, the Oscar-worthy dramatic performances because of the other less lower-brow type of movies, we'll say, that Sandler has selected the last 2.5 decades or so. I'm thinking about the Meyerowitz stories, which I thought was very good. It's on Netflix either last year or the year before that. Punch Drunk Love, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie from 12, 13 years ago, I thought he should have been nominated for an Oscar. It wasn't a big Oscars year, and he was tremendous in that movie. If you don't think Adam Sandler can take on a serious dramatic role, you watch Punch Drunk Love. Excellent movie. But this perception is a strong one around Sandler. They view this guy as a clown. And it's a strong perception I believe the Academy has for him because of Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore and Waterboy and Grown Ups and the awful Netflix movies. There's a movie called The Cobbler out there. Stay far away from The Cobbler. You're welcome. But there are other directors and actors that have overcome some of these perceptions and done great critical work, critically acclaimed work, actually won Oscars. Think of Adam McKay, who is putting out The Big Short and Vice the last 5 or 6 years. For a long stretch, he was just known as the guy who did Step Brothers and did comedies. We've seen people take this route before. It looks like this Joker movie is going to be critically acclaimed. The one with Joaquin Phoenix. Todd Phillips was known before as the guy who did the Hangover movies. So he's going from that to directing Joaquin Phoenix and doing so in such a way that you're getting critical attention. Matthew McConaughey, he was pigeonholed for about a decade as just being the heartthrob, the guy who's in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Ghost of Girlfriends Past, the list of movies that he's been in, Failure to Launch. McConaughey, he was seen as the rom-com guy until he wasn't. Dallas Buyers Club, he broke through there and has done great dramatic performance work. Adam Sandler, this could be the movie for him. And what a scene that would be if Sandler is giving an Oscar speech. If he's even there and nominated, it's just going to look strange to see Sandler in that place because we've never associated that guy and the work he does with that Academy. We just never done that. Yes, Dad.
I'm going to give it a shot. I'm extremely skeptical that he can pull off a drama
But have you not seen Punch Drunk Love?
I have not seen Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, my gosh. Paul Thomas Anderson. It's a tremendous movie. And he was awesome in it. He's done this a few times, the Meyerowitz stories. So I believe Sandler could do it.
Well, I'm more basing it on the fact that out of the, I don't know, 20-plus comedies that he's done over the past two decades, he's literally playing Adam Sandler, acting as Adam Sandler in an Adam Sandler movie. Like, literally, the characters never change. It's just his outfits do. But he doesn't. So, I don't know. Maybe he can.
It is a confounding thing in the 2000s. Adam Sandler is somehow the attractive guy to all these beautiful women. I didn't think that was very believable in 51st Dates.
Oh, Drew
that
Barrymore.
Sequence at the, not even just Drew Barrymore. The beginning of the movie, there's this sequence where all these women are just falling in love with Adam Sandler.
How many times has he had Jennifer Aniston as his love interest in a movie? I mean,
you mean Drew Barrymore?
No, I mean Jennifer Aniston. How many times has he had Jennifer Aniston? He's had her a couple of times.
Twice. There was the Brooklyn Decker movie. There was the movie on Netflix that just came out.
Murder Mystery, yeah.
Yeah, not worth your time.
Yeah, skip past. I mean, we saw it all in the preview, pretty much.
Pretty bad. It was more Drew Barrymore than it was Aniston, yeah?
That's what you do, though. If you're a star.
Like Barrymore, it's The Wedding Singer. It's Blended most recently. It's 51st Dates. And there's one I'm forgetting.
I mean, if you're a star, so if you were a star of your own studio, Josh, and you could make your own movies, that's kind of the way to go, right? To get who's the starlet that's out there that you have a crush on right now?
The starlet I have a crush on right now. What,
you know,
Aaron?
You know the answer to that question.
What is the answer to that question?
It's Taylor Swift.
But she's not an actress, though, right?
The actress, I think, is what.
What is it, starlet?
Going for
well, but that would be the way to get to know her, and you know. Have a role in your
Marion
movie.
Marion Cotillard might be the answer to the question. I've always had a thing for Marion Cotillard.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know Marion Cotillard?
No, I don't know who that is. Should I know? What's she in?
She was in The Dark Knight, the first one. She was in Inception. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I don't think she would qualify as being a starlet by any means.
No, I don't think. I don't think so.
I'll just go ahead and say J-Law. That seems like it's the right answer. But maybe we're having the wrong discussion here. We're spending a lot of time on Sandler. Kevin Garnett is playing a role in this movie. Let's think about a world, not where Adam Sandler is giving an Oscar speech, but no, as a supporting cast member, Kevin Garnett is winning the Oscars. He would get on stage and he would yell, "Anything is possible!" He wasn't lying.
That would be great.
On the TD Garden floor 11 years ago, he wasn't lying. Kevin Garnett actually meant anything is possible. It's not that the Celtics won a title, creating really this big three template that preceded LeBron and Bosh and Wade joining together. No, what he actually was talking about and thinking about on that floor is 10, 11 years from now, I'm going to be in a movie with Adam Sandler winning an Oscar. Anything is possible.
Would it be funnier if he yelled anything is possible or if he just came to the mic real calm and said, "I told you." And walked off.
Can you find me the Kevin Garnett sound where he's talking about going to war and talking about he took the analogy a little too far. That is worth finding. Maybe even the Craig Sager interview where he told him to strip butt naked. Can't keep anything. Burn it. Burn all of it. There are a lot of Kevin Garnett lines we could pull if we have to, and I think for nostalgia's sake, I'd be completely game for that. But as Desmond Johnson tries to find that, remember the feel-good story we brought to you last week regarding the Iowa State student who pulled up the beer sign, "Hey, I need my beer replenished at college game day." We thought that was a very cool thing, and they raised about $50,000 he did on his Venmo page. He didn't use it for beer. He didn't use it for his school. Instead, he went to the rival school, Iowa, and gave it to the Children's Hospital. They have the cool tradition at the end of the first quarter where they wave at the Children's Hospital. It's one of the coolest things you could do. And it's a great thing that this kid, Carson King, 24 years old, did going back to his school. But the Des Moines Register found two racist tweets that he sent out 8 years ago as a 16-year-old, and now he has to send out this statement saying, I had no recollection of it. And rereading it today, 8 years later, I see it was an attempt at humor that was offensive and hurtful. I am embarrassed and stunned to reflect on what I thought was funny when I was 16 years old. I want to sincerely apologize. Close quote. How awful is this? Carson King shouldn't have to apologize here. He's 16 years old when he sent the tweets out. Cancel culture has gone way too far. Who's the person? I want to know who it is that thinks, okay, this guy's doing something great. Something awesome for children. They raised $1 million. I mentioned the 50 grand that they raised. Well, it's been matched by other corporations, and now it's gotten close to $1 million for the children's hospital. There is somebody who decides to look into Carson King and see what he's tweeting out as a teenager. And not even just a teenager, somebody who isn't a legal adult at that point. We don't criminalize people the same way until they're 18 years old. We shouldn't be forcing guys to apologize 8 years after the fact for what they sent out when they were 16. It's the same way I feel about all the Kevin Hart garbage. It's the same way I feel about a lot of things where we're holding our sensibilities today in 2019. We're holding people in the past, in our past comments, to this standard. And that's dangerous. Whether you're talking about the lady that sang the national anthem at Philadelphia Flyers games for many years, who had a statue that is no longer allowed to stand because of what she did in 1931, which at the time was just a satire, a song that was written by an African-American man, but today is seen as too offensive. We're just looking at history saying, oh, well, that's something that wouldn't fly today. We did that to superstars in Hollywood in the 60s and 70s. Looked at comments that they had back then that were public, that no one had an issue with back then. But today we look at and say, oh, let's cancel this person. Can't have that anymore. And we're doing this to someone who's just fundamentally trying to do good. Okay, maybe just applaud the fact that this guy raised $1 million for children in a hospital in Iowa. Maybe don't dive into his tweets 8 years ago when he's 16 and force him to apologize. Maybe just applaud the good thing versus try to dive through and find something bad. Des, well, do you have the Kevin Garnett sound?
It's on game 7, man. That's it. It's all the marbles. Sitting in the house, I'm loading up the pump. I'm loading up the Uzi. I got a couple of M16s, a couple of 9s. I got a couple of joints with some silencers on them. I'm just loading up clips, a couple of grenades. Got a missile launcher with a couple, you know, missiles. I'm ready for war.
Yeah.
Missile
launcher. So we often hear that. Going to war, man. I'm a soldier, getting ready for a game. But it feels like he took it a step too far. Funny enough, that's actually how, when people ask, how are you getting ready for the radio show? This is how I answer the question right here. Someone said, they came up to me, hey, Josh, what are you doing to get ready for the show?
It's on game 7, man. That's it. It's all the marbles. I'm sitting in the house, I'm loading up the pump. I'm loading up the Uzi. I got a couple of M16s, a couple of 9s. I got a couple of joints with some silencers on them. I'm just loading up clips, a couple of grenades. Got a missile launcher with a couple, you know, missiles. I'm ready for war.
The Dixie Classic Fair, by the way, is coming up at the Winston-Salem Fairgrounds, October 4th through the 13th. They're celebrating, get this, their 137th year. Advanced tickets are for sale and wristbands right now. Save up to 40% now. Don't forget, hashtag, how do you fare? And visit dcfair.com today. Fireworks, rides, and food nightly. Will that make it into the KG acceptance speech, you think?
No, in KG, anything's possible, so.
That's exactly right. Anything is possible, including an Adam Sandler nomination for an Oscar. So I'm excited about this movie, Uncut Gems. You are listening to WSGS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals together make up Sports Hub Triad.
You could try getting your sports news and talk somewhere else.
My life sucks quite enough already, thank you.
Best to leave it right here on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I've been on record saying Ron Rivera deserved the game ball Sunday for believing in Kyle Allen. But he is also responsible for the multi-day smearing news cycle that we've seen of Cam Newton the last 2 days as well. The Carolina Panthers really let Cam down over the last month. They made us think that he was okay when he wasn't against the Rams and against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So when we're evaluating how Cam's performing, we're doing so inaccurately and unfairly because we're not privy to all the information. That's hanging Cam out to dry, and that's unfair for him. Amy Trask was writing for The Athletic, former Oakland Raiders, executive, and she said as much that this advantage that coaches think they're getting by keeping information close to the vest, not disclosing injuries, it's overblown. I don't believe disclosing injuries to be a big disadvantage for teams. Sketchy people, in my view, are also weaker people. Look at some of the other perceived public disadvantages that have been peddled by coaches in college football, basketball, and other sports for years and years and years and years, and will be the case for decades on end, the next few years. First off, locker room access. We've often been told in the media, when it comes to college sports, we're not allowed in the locker room, it's too invasive, nothing good will come of it, this type of access, can't let the media in, what will they possibly learn, what would they possibly write about, talk about on the radio and on television? So instead, we're just going to pull the players, bring them out to a room, and everybody will get the same stuff at one time. Control the information a little bit more. Do you know who doesn't do that? Coach K and Duke. Anybody going to question the success of the all-time winningest coach in college basketball? Don't you think he'd be worried about this more than anybody else? If you're that successful, if you have that type of interest surrounding your program? No, you have Zion bleeping Williamson in your locker room and RJ Barrett and people from here to Timbuktu who want to cover the team, and they let people in and give the access. I asked Coach K's handler, John Jackson, about this, and one of the head communications people at Duke, why is this something that you do? Nobody else in the league does it. He said, as long as Coach K's here, it's going to happen, because he views this as making these guys better, preparing them for the NBA. But some say, oh, can't let them in the locker room. This is a disadvantage for our guys. And football, making the coordinators available publicly, having them talk about what's happening the week coming up. Mac Brown, I don't know if he did this at Texas, but he's doing it now with Phil Longo and Jay Bateman. They speak to the media right after Mac Brown does on Monday. You're going to say a Hall of Fame coach, Mac Brown, doesn't know what he's doing? Dabo Swinney makes Brent Venables and Jeff Scott available for comment each week, and it usually is an hour or an hour and a half. You saying Clemson's not getting a great advantage? You saying Clemson's working at a disadvantage? I don't think so. When I was covering high school sports, I just remember there were so many coaches, and it was often the coaches of the worst teams who protected information like it's the nuclear codes. I remember I was on the air with Wes Durham one time, and Wes said, yeah, I hated doing high school games, or high school games were the toughest to prepare for because coaches don't give you anything. As if, as the voice of the Atlanta Falcons and former voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, I care what's happening with East Forsyth. I'm going to give that information to somebody else, particularly the visiting coach. No, I was told long ago, and this was from Lincoln Riley when he was the offensive coordinator at East Carolina. He told me a long time ago, Josh, football is not about tricking people. It's not about deceiving them. The people on the other side, they are smart. These coaches, they know what they're doing. They make a ton. You're not going to fool them most times. It's about being true to yourself, recognizing what you do, and executing that better than they do. There are people who think football is about trying to trick people. It isn't. Who do you think you're tricking with these injury reports out there? By telling people Cam Newton's right when he's not. It didn't fool the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They saw that
like all of us saw, that he didn't run against the Los Angeles Rams. What advantage, really, did Carolina get there? I'd say it was minimal. I'd say the advantage you get from that is far less than what you get on the other end, how much it cost Cam Newton publicly. If the Panthers were honest from the jump and addressed it sooner, Cam Newton isn't leading today's national news cycle. People aren't talking about on Sports Illustrated to ESPN, all over the place, that Cam Newton's done. What's the future for the Carolina Panthers? That isn't happening today if you're honest from the jump and you put out the proper information rather than trying to trick the Rams or the Buccaneers by being coy with the injury report. I'll say it again. Sketchy people are weaker people. Dave Clawson, 3 consecutive winning seasons he's had at Wake. He's the only coach I know that opens up preseason camp to the media, allows us to see whatever. Because what has he had to hide? Nothing. He has a winning program. He's willing to show what he's doing. He doesn't mind. And I respect people like that who aren't getting bogged down with the nonsense, thinking that just because Bill Belichick's out here not saying anything to the media, that's the way you go about winning, as if that is connected to the success New England's had. Whew. It's been a rough day when it comes to some of the overreactions to Cam. Nationally, people tend to miss the details versus local reporters, local radio shows who cover the team day to day. There are a ton of people in the national media, big names, who are tying Cam Newton's foot injury to the shoulder that he sustained, the shoulder concern he's had in 2017 and 2018. They're tying these two together, even though Cam Newton has never really hurt his foot. It maybe happened one other time in his career, but nobody is concerned about Cam Newton's foot going into the year. He's 30. He's not 37-year-old Big Ben Roethlisberger. His foot can recover. He can still run pretty darn well for the next handful of years. I'm not concerned about that, and we're seeing a lot of people lump these things together as if they're related. Cam's shoulder, Cam's foot, when the truth of the matter is they're not related at all. You can tweet the show at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600. If you want in on today's show, Desmond Johnson, the producer of this program, what do you got on Cam's foot?
Actually, he has hurt his foot before. He had he came into the league with an injured ankle that he hurt in Auburn his last year there. He had surgery on it. It was his left ankle, so it's not even the same injury, but he has had an injury to his
ankle's
lower body
before.
Ankle's
not a foot,
before. Though. Right. He's had to his lower extremity. He's had...
Sure.
An injury.
In hockey, it's the lower body injury.
The lower body.
Speaking of vague injury reports, hockey, if you get hit in the face with the puck and it cuts your eye, that is the same as if you hurt your shoulder. It'll be listed as an upper body injury. That's what you have in hockey. It's just garbage. I don't think it does teams that much of a service, being coy about the injuries. It's almost a slap in the face to those preparing, as if Bill O'Brien and the Texans, if Cam was playing this week, can't see the tape from Tampa and L.A. to see that Cam Newton is limping around and that maybe Cam is 100% with the foot because of the way he was walking off against the Patriots. What service does that do?
Tom Brady has been on the Patriots injury report for like 8 years and counting, if I'm not mistaken. They just throw him on there every week, almost like a mocking shot at the NFL for having them do this in the first place. So,
no one pays attention to the injury report.
Yeah, nobody cares till Sunday at 12:30.
No one cares about the injury report. Even if they were being truthful. Let's just say we're in a world where everybody's being truthful.
Yeah, let's,
right?
let's imagine
let's
that.
Let's just play let's, that. Yeah. Ron Rivera is telling the honest truth about Cam's foot. Sean McVay is going to think, is he telling us that because he actually is going to run Cam Newton? He's telling us that his foot's injured and that he's going to be limited? Is Ron telling us the truth here, or is he trying to just juke the other way? There's no way that anyone does pay that much of attention to this injury report. The injury report only exists for Las Vegas and for gambling. That's the reason it's here. The NFL will never admit that, but that's it. Coaches don't want the injury report. Teams don't want the injury report. Players don't want the injury report. The reason it's there is because of how much money is generated when it comes to gambling based on these reports. There's a lot of people that do put stock into them. But I want to cheer things up around here. And a good way to cheer things up is this could work any day. If you're having a tough day and you need something to put a smile on your face, a good way to do that, surefire, is just go to Mike Leach's Twitter page. We've heard from Coach Leach many different times. What was the most recent example we heard from Coach Leach? He was comparing mascots in the Pac-12, calling Harry Potter fans Harry Potter activists. They need to figure out what kind of powers the Sun Devil has. That's enjoyable. Him talking about marriage and preparing for a wedding. Him talking about cargo shorts. There are many Mike Leach sounds that you can pull. Something such as this.
First of all, what kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We've got to consider that. I'm going to say the Wildcat's out. The Trojan, does he have a horse or is he on foot? Does he have a bow and arrow or just his sword? The Bruin, definitely formidable. Another bear up there at Cal. The tree, I imagine that tree's going to get chopped down. It's unless we're going to go with a bird and somebody might get pecked or something. I don't know.
It's excellent analysis trying to figure out what the best mascot is in the Pac-12. Who would win that battle royale? And it's a good point he brings up on the Sun Devil. We don't know what powers they possess. We need to find those Harry Potter activists to figure that out. But Mike Leach, the point I wanted to make, on Twitter, he's an excellent follow, and it will put a smile on your face every day if you just go and see what he has to say. He tweeted an image. It was a meme that says, watches the Food Network one time, and then, quote, I made a pureed nut spread with a grape relish reduction paired with a broche bun, end quote. And it's a photo of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That's the type of content you can find from the Washington State coach. In addition to that, he's posting pictures from like a mountain. There's this community center in Indian Hills that says, when you're down by the sea and an eel bites your knee, that's amore. You never know what you're going to get from a Mike Leach Twitter account. He's reposting this Daily Express story where Antarctica scientists apparently found bizarre creatures 3,500 miles underneath ice, saying it's nothing like they've seen before. Mike Leach jumped to the conclusion saying, what a week, both UFOs and unknown deep sea creatures. I wonder what else is up and down there. That's a dream guest. Like tomorrow at 3:30, Dabo Sweeney's going to be on the show, but that comes to be expected with us being an ACC country. Dabo's getting set to face North Carolina this weekend. A dream guest to have on the show. People ask me that at times. Who would you like to have on? Presidents? Would you like to have Tom Brady, Hall of Famers, Michael Jordan? Would you like to have him? No. Mike Leach is number one on the list among people I would love to have on this radio show. So it's an open invitation to get Mike Leach on the show. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCN Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals making up Sports Hub Triad.